Paper 8, Section 2, Old Single Column, page 92. Now, these next few sections, there's a number of items which I'm sure a lot of you or longtime readers are quite familiar with, and they're fairly straightforward. But one of the things we want to see that's woven all over through this is really the answer to this question that you might have wondered a little bit. Like when we were up in the Supreme Papers, and we were getting really specific about things, trying to be very careful about what designation we used for what thing, and trying to very carefully sort out the precise thinking that you need to start to think about experiential deity. We made the point that in the most basic sense, if you're talking about let's start with this. I mean, the third source and center really has, embodied within it, two faces that represent the fundamental parallelism in reality that stems from the absolute spirit of the eternal Son and the absolute of matter, the Isle of Paradise. That fundamental parallelism that's established between unity and individuality in the cosmos, has a conjoint expression in the third source and center, and on the personality side, really the personality, the creator face of that third source and center, we were calling the conjoint actor, and the power, the controller, the impersonal face, we were calling the infinite spirit. And that we basically used that conjoint actor, infinite spirit, of all the names that you can use for the third source and center that we're going to immediately be reading about here. We chose those two, like they did, they sort of suggested for us up there in the Supreme Papers, to contrast the personal and the impersonal sides. And yet, when you think about it, now that we're in the infinite spirit paper here, an awful lot of the time, they use the designation infinite spirit, and they'll say he, not it, and they'll talk about it in a personal fashion. On the one hand, you say, well, it's all one third source and center, and perhaps they're trying to, really help us to appreciate that a lot of what we experience that comes from the third source and center has its roots in the infinite spirit side. A creative spirit is, except for the Michael Son, is an impersonal phenomenon, a controller phenomenon, not a creator phenomenon, really, until the primary eruption. And you think, well, maybe they're just, trying to emphasize that. And yes, they are. That's part of the picture. But there's a more, there's a greater truth to using the designation infinite spirit a lot, and actually allowing it to be used in a personal fashion, even if you say he, because you're initially constructing the revelation to appreciate God is transcendence, and the third source and center is part of that existential deity. But this fact of the infinite mother spirit, and when we talk about the third source and center acquiring experiential deity nature, and just like the primary eruption, now not just being called the infinite spirit, but the infinite mother spirit, it's not the conjoint mother actor. Okay? It's the infinite mother spirit. It's that side that takes on a new expression of personal character when it goes from the infinite spirit to the infinite mother spirit. And that She-like expression, that expression that has a presence rather than being a transcendent point, he-like phenomenon that injects influence into the domain in which we dwell, that there is a personal presence within that is just that, a personal presence. And it's not the conjoint mother actor. It's the infinite mother spirit. And so that's, you'll see that that's kind of all over in here, you know, to really recognize why they so often lead with that name, the infinite spirit. Because that's really, you know, it's via the bosom of the Father. It's via that God as immanence rather than God as transcendence that we develop our initial relationship with not only the fact of the third source and center, but even the personal nature of the third source and center is via that mother side. And you don't get to the experience the third source and center as a he-like personal fact until when?
We graduate from the super universe.
Even farther than that. Until you're standing on paradise. You know, they don't have a he-like personal presence in Havona even. I mean, these are absolute infinite facts. You're going through an absentite Havona. Okay. Even when you're finding personal nature of the third source and center in Havona, you know, it's a personal presence. Not a personal point. It's a mother-like phenomenon, not a father-like phenomenon. That you're, you know, it's not until you're standing, you know, in the center of the aisle, you know, there you experience the third source and center as a point personality expression, as a he-like fact. When you finally transcended and now stand where God as transcendent stands. Okay. So, That's really the primary reason that the infinite spirit is the dominant word that's used for the third source and center. It's this hitherto unrecognized, you know, God as immanence, half of the picture that makes that name the most significant one to begin to reflect on and understand and build your understanding about the third source and center from that starting point.
Yeah. The third source and center is, I don't know how much more magnificent you could get as far as super additive.
Right, I mean, right, exactly. I mean, you see that right off the bat as we start reading here. I mean, let me just make a comment on that. I mean, super additive and just how super additive, you bifurcate, the infinitude, and bring its highest expression of that relationship together in the third source and center. I mean, it is the super additive consequence. When we went through total deity, we recognized that in terms of a deity fact, what that what that facet of deity, expresses, the spirit, that type of deity, that's a direct expression of that which results. You know, when you have that which acts, that which reacts, and that which results, the infinity, that which results, that's a direct expression of the fullness, of the core essence of that which results. You know, when you're talking about the infinite one, the infinitude, and the infinity. So it is, divinely revealed deity.
She is the first one we recognize.
Right. It's just, it's all there. And more than any other concept, there's a multitude of names, you know, of designations that you can use to capture various aspects, various facets of this fact that is the third source and center. All right, well, let's read a little bit. So on the nature of the infinite spirit.
Two, nature of the infinite spirit. The conjoined creator is from eternity and is wholly and without qualification one with the universal Father and the eternal Son. The infinite spirit reflects in perfection not only the nature of the Paradise Father, but also the nature of the original Son. The third source and center is known by numerous titles: the universal spirit, the supreme guide, the conjoint creator, the divine executive, the infinite mind, the spirit of spirits, the Paradise Mother spirit, the conjoint actor, the final coordinator, the omnipresent spirit, the absolute intelligence, the divine action. And on Urantia, he is sometimes confused with the cosmic mind.
Let's just reflect a little bit there. So just, you know, just we're not going to go into, you know, unpack everything there, but just kind of, you know, did you pick up on some sense of, you know, someone, you know, they're saying, so someone in the universe uses a certain one of these designations, you know, what do they have in mind? You know, and just notice the frequency of a certain element here. Okay, so the universal spirit. Okay, well, so they're thinking, oh, there's something that's some spirit that's not as universal, and then in contrast, this is the universal spirit. Well, what would be an obvious, you have creative spirits, you know, they may be in a local universe and they have that kind of universality, local universality, but then there's the capital U, yeah, universal spirit, you know, over all those creative spirits. Yeah, right. I mean, they're all proper designations, okay? And of course, we know you have creative mother spirits, you know, and so, see, this is, so that notion of universal spirit is tied to some grand expression of creative mother spirit-like phenomena. The supreme guide. You have all the children of the third source and center. Children of the infinite mother spirit, the daughters of the infinite mother spirit, all the angels who are guides. So all of those she's, all those daughters, you know, above them is the supreme guide. Again, it's, you know, it's the she part here. I mean, those are not daughters of the conjoint actor. Those are daughters of the infinite mother spirit. You know, but you got, you know, the conjoint creator, and we've talked about that, divine executive, the infinite mind, that's a really biggie. Okay, the spirit of spirits, there it is again. You have the creative spirits, and then there's the spirit of spirits. And then you have it directly, the paradise mother spirit, you know, in contrast to the creative mother spirits. You have the conjoint actor, the final coordinator. Coordinator, that's a mother word. Mm-hmm. And final coordinator, that's an interesting thing. We won't go into the specifics of that right here, but you could appreciate how it might be that when you've sorted all out, you know, and try to understand exactly what flavor of mother deity is involved in the infinite mother spirit, say in contrast to the eternal mother son, what's the difference between those two types of or expressions of mother type deity? If you've got a fact that you would use designations like the infinite spirit, the infinite mind, you wouldn't be too surprised if when you sort out all the mother type deity, that might be a really, really high expression of mother type deity, if it also, you know, could be attached to designations like, I mean, not only infinite spirit, but infinite mind. I mean, that's, yeah, mind is a super additive consequence. So we're talking about some pretty high things, you know. So yeah, it's it in that when you sort it all out, except for the infinite upholder, you know, you've got some really high upholding happening here. It's the final coordinator. You know, and then omnipresent spirit, you know, there we have again, another one. That one you might even I mean, you could again think of it in the same sense of you know, with the creative mother spirits, but you could even bring in, because it's omni, so it's even sort of a higher word. You know, you could make it, well, you have the reflective mother spirits at the super universe level, you know, that are in parallel to the creative mother spirits at the local universe level, and those are tied to the a particular master spirit. You know, and a master spirit is only present in a particular super universe, along with the mother spirits of that particular super universe. But then there would be something that would be over all of that, an omnipresent spirit. So much of this, you know, is bringing in this presence aspect, this mother expression, this place-like expression, not this transcendent injection into place direction-like expression. And it's, you know, it's all in the context of, but we're going to just use one primary one, the infinite spirit. And when we want to remind you of what we were just talking about there, we'll say the infinite mother spirit. Okay, so, the absolute intelligence, the divine action. And then this whole bit about this presence, maybe we could just, yeah, we could, you know, if you think about the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart here, you know, when we're talking about the hierarchy of mother presence, you know, here's the infinite mother spirit. You know, when you get down into this, you know, actually into the super universe, local universe levels here, you know, that whole domain of the cosmic mind at these three different levels, you know, at the highest level, it's the collective super universe level, then the individual super universe level, and down the bottom, it's at the local universe level. You have that whole domain of the cosmic mind, you know, which is an expression, you know, once you transcend the supreme level of that presence of the infinite mother spirit, you know. And so they're saying, you know, you might sort of superconsciously recognize that the cosmic mind is a downstepped expression of that presence of the, you know, the infinite mother spirit, and you could confuse. You'd think, well, this is the infinite mother spirit, you know, this sort of totality of this presence of cosmic mind. No, that's a shadow cast. That's what they're pointing out there. Okay, so, all right, so when all is said and done in that whole list of names, there's a lot that's pointing to the presence aspect. Really not so much focusing on the he aspect of the third source and center. That's, you know, that's in play. I mean, you got to have that, or you don't understand a lot of things, like how Havona comes into existence, you know, with a conjoint creator and all that sort of stuff. But anyway. All right, so then they throw in a little bit more, as if we didn't have enough names. You know, so even when they're not listing names, they're using various names too, you know. Just name after name after name here.
It is altogether proper to denominate the third person of deity the infinite spirit, for God is spirit. But material creatures who tend toward the error of viewing matter as basic reality and mind together with spirit as postulates rooted in matter would better comprehend the third source and center if he were called the infinite reality, the universal organizer, or the personality coordinator.
You know, and just, I mean, we'll talk about those three in a second here when we get down a little bit, a couple paragraphs forward. But, you know, you notice that one of them they did bring out is the coordinator thing again. And we've talked about how, you know, that whole coordination through the individuality of the whole, you know, she does that because, you know, to the extent to which you're a person, you are coordinated through the individuality of the whole. There's association of matter to matter and stuff like that. Mindal energy to mindal energy, but in terms of coordination in the cosmic system, that only happens to the extent to which you're a person. You know, the extent to which you've taken some of that animal origin self and personalized it so that there's some personal self in that upper domain of your nature. You're not just one master, you're actually beginning to be two masters. You know, in this life, perforce, you serve two masters. So, you know, they're stressing it again. See, there's a coordinator, again, being brought up.
The infinite spirit as a universe revelation of divinity is unsearchable and utterly beyond human comprehension. To sense the absoluteness of the Spirit, you need only contemplate the infinity of the Universal Father and stand in awe of the eternity of the original Son.
So what would I get as a superadditive consequence of the infinity of the Universal Father and the eternity of the original Son? Well, that'd be a big concept, whatever the heck I'd call that. See? Right.
There is mystery indeed in the person of the Infinite Spirit, but not so much as in the Father and the Son. Of all aspects of the Father's nature, the conjoint Creator most strikingly discloses his infinity. Even if the Master Universe eventually expands to infinity, the spirit presence, energy control, and mind potential of the conjoint actor will be found adequate to meet the demands of such a limitless creation.
Okay. The first one, the conjoint Creator most strikingly discloses his infinity. I did notice that, they used it both the infinite spirit, the infinite mind. They were really using that adjective, whereas it's the eternal Son. Yeah. So hence that, giving you a little sense of why. Of course, we also know that adjective of infinite is indicating when you start looking at things in the higher perspective, that indicates there's two reservoirs there associated with the third source and center. There's a reservoir for third source personality, that's the infinite spirit. And then there's a reservoir for the activity of mind, that's the infinite mind. I mean, there's a reservoir for just the literal energy fact that is mindal energy, that's the universal absolute. But the activity of mind, remember they've brought that out. There's actually two things that are together there. That activity of mind has this other source of the infinite mind. But notice there's a triplet in there. Spirit presence, energy control, and mind potential. You can reflect on how that ties back to that list of three. They said, if you want to take a bottom-up point of view, the material creature point of view, and you might say infinite reality, universal organizer, personality coordinator. Think about the parallel. So infinite reality, that's the spirit presence. Like they said, since you have a hard time sort of thinking of spirit as a substance in first principles, we could just, instead of calling it the infinite spirit, we call it the infinite reality. This sort of infinite fact that's just there, i.e. the spirit presence, this sort of substrate that's behind everything. Universal organizer, energy control. And then the personality coordinator, the mind potential. This whole bit about, this distinction is vital in a cosmic system. If you're really going to be functioning as a part of this cosmic system, utilizing the mindedness of the cosmos, cosmic mind, you have to be linked into the system via the personality coordinator. That's where you have start to have true mind potential. Or like Jesus said, when you're going up, the third level of meaning is the level of mind. Because that's the doorway into true mind potential, what you can do in the upper domain. Okay, see, so they're just drawing all these little parallels and giving you different avenues of understanding to try to approach this, infinity to the infinity power that is the third source and center.
I see these like two camps among Christians. And it's like you've got the evangelicals, and they don't have a problem when you talk about spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the more material-minded Christians, the socialists, what I call socialist Christians, they just don't want to go there.
Yeah. The irony of that, of course, that those who kind of see themselves as the most spirit-minded, fixate on material things. That's always been a funny irony of the history of religious thought. Right there, they're trying to give you ways where you can kind of get them on an on-ramp of some sort, yeah. You know?
I think the sentence says, the error of viewing matter as basic reality and the mind
the
together with...
is after mind.
I know.
Right, but that's a parenthetical. Right, mind together with spirit.
But mind together with spirit as postulates rooted in matter, I think it's mind together with spirits that material creatures view as postulates.
Right, and that, yeah, right.
That's the way I think
that. Right, and that's right, and that's the proper, I mean, you know, spirit aside, we understand that that's even more rarefied thing that kind of gets, you know, missed. But that whole notion that mind is something that wells up out of matter. You know, or literally just saying there is no such thing as mind. Mind is just functioning of brain.
You're not going to get anywhere with someone, yeah. Especially if they're fairly intelligent.
You know, and if they're, you know, and if they're, you know, they appear to be religious minded, but, you know, they maybe are just sort of more spiritually minded, and they want to be a thoroughly modern Millie. They want to be part, you know, of the latest, greatest scientific thinking and stuff. You know, they tend to get sucked into the smartest people on the planet talk about brain and imaging the brain and understanding the brain and brain and brain and brain. You know, if you're an old Star Trek fan, you know, there's a Spock's brain episode, brain and brain, what is brain? You know, what is this fixation on brain? It's just matter. I mean, aren't you at the very least spiritually minded? So you say, did you notice that you're getting sucked into rationalizing everything from a material viewpoint and thinking just because there's all these cool documentaries that you can watch on the cable channels and blah, 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 you know? Limiting yourself to the ignorance of others, you know, masquerading as the expertise of others. Yes, exactly.
Maybe there's a compliment here,
mm-hmm.
when they say... to complement, I mean, to contemplate,
mm-hmm.
The infinity of the universal Father, and stand in awe of the eternity of the original Son.
And the word they chose is, it's like, well, okay, so I can do this. Well, how can I do this? If you go into the temple, contemplate. If you're with the temple, if you're in the upper domain, you can reflect on this and you can understand. Not going to happen down here. You have to be with the temple. It has to be contemplation. You know, notice, you know, the human, you know, I'll just remind everyone, remember when they say, you know, material creatures, it's just a fact, the word human means up out of the humus, you know, up out of the dirt. Right. Material creatures, you know. The difference is, of course, it's not just focusing on the dirt part, but the up out of. You're not just a fact, you're a truth if you're a human. You're an arrow pointing upward out of your material origin. You're not just a material fact. You're a material origin truth pointed upward. True, man. Yeah.
Does the soul end or get folded in to the fused character at fusion?
As long as you have a Marantia body, you know, which you do all the way through the local universe, that Marantia body has a Marantia brain. It has, and that soul is that. So there's always. Yeah, and so the way to think about it is there's, you know, as long as you have a Marantia body, you still very much have a fact in that Marantia body that is this object called your soul, which now, you know, is the heart, the temple, okay, of that Marantia consciousness. But the little addition to this is, and maybe let's do it this way. So if we do the temple picture again, you know, so we have this temple within. The adjuster is here, okay, and over the course of your local universe career, you have this soul that's seated on this Marantia body, and slowly you're infusing that temple into the adjuster. Okay? Initially, you just have the top of the temple glued eternally to the adjuster. That's fusion. But then it takes you the whole local universe career to consecrate this mind, completely, to that experiential deity nature of the adjuster that you're bonded to, and to infuse it into it, until finally you don't need a Marantia body anymore. It's all in this spirit body, in your first stage spirit. Okay. Yeah. So it's just, however you want to visualize it, just more and more of that soul is within the adjuster, as it were, where the two are literally one fact, rather than two facts that are stuck together, inseparably. Yeah, it's the scaffolding, process, because it takes a lot of work to get it all in there. It just takes that initial spurt to get the upper reaches glued to the adjuster, but all that other stuff is working its way up still. We know that a lot of it can't even begin to happen until you've have yourself firmly individualized as a Marantia individual through the local system. You can't really get started on a lot of this harmonization into the adjuster until you get to the constellation level. So you're sort of potentializing that infusing process down at the local system level, getting it firmly in place. It's like, okay, now that we've got it firmly in place, doesn't have a lot of animal origin baggage dangling from it still, we can start to really get serious about getting this in there, getting it into the adjuster. All right.
Though in every way sharing the perfection, the righteousness, and the love of the Universal Father, the Infinite Spirit inclines toward the mercy attributes of the Eternal Son, thus becoming the mercy minister of the Paradise deities to the grand universe. Ever and always, universally and eternally, the Spirit is a mercy minister, for as the Divine Sons reveal the love of God, so the Divine Spirit depicts the mercy of God.
Now, if you're a new reader, this is where when you're reading this, it starts to really sink. It's like, I think I'm starting to get this. I have love, mercy, and ministry. That's the first three persons. It finally starts to sink in when they lay it out like this definitively. Don't ever forget how important a core idea that is. And just beginning to get a handle on the existential deity fact that is the three absolute persons. And expanding your view, your worldview, or your universe view, from some simple monotheistic idea to beginning to actually have three, infinite absolute persons, and then getting in the other four absolutes, and eventually having the seven absolutes infinity as your initial existential foundation point, as opposed to just some simple monotheistic point. So when you're engaging people, this is one of the most important things. Last week we were talking about, we're coming up on this, that whole bit about love, mercy, ministry. And the fact that, they're going to emphasize here how much the three are one in so many ways. And one of the easiest ways to understand the oneness of the three is the word love. It's right there. The Father is love, period. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. Okay, the Son is mercy. What's mercy? Mercy is applied love. What's the foundation word again? Love. Applied love, but love still. So it's love and love. Okay, and then the third person is mercy ministry, or the ministry of mercy. The ministry of applied love. What's the root word again? Love. They are one in that personal fact of love. And you literally can see why the Father's at the core and then enveloping that love, that existential fact of love is applied love, and then the ministry of applied love. They're just stepping out from the core of love.
Love is founded on understanding, nurtured by unselfish service, and perfected in wisdom.
Right, and that is a way, that's a great one to reflect on, about what this love thing is that we're saying the three have in common. Is it a noun or is it a verb? Is it something that you do or not? I mean, you know, look at that definition. You know, it's all about recognizing the fundamental dynamic nature that is love. And hence, all three of these are fundamentally dynamic facts, a threefold dynamism that powers the personal universe. You know, you have this fundamentally interactive, dynamic process of understanding and, you know, and developing wisdom and of course, it's all service. I mean, you know, the difference between the existential fact of love that you can recognize with your merely your spiritual consciousness so that it can be one of the mere spiritual fruits of the Spirit, that list of single words, you know, but to really understand truly what love is, you can't use just one word to really begin to get it. You know, true love is loving service. You know, it's a cosmic phenomenon. And it's not, you know, you have to strike step with an experiential cosmos, not an existential cosmos. So you can't just be in love. We're now to see love as a noun there. It's a static thing, and I'm just going to pool myself into it. You know, like a drop of water in the ocean. Yeah. You have to be a solid point that can be mobile and, you know, in loving service. You know, it's not in love, it's in loving service. That's what you're in. You're in an experiential reality, not an existential reality.
It's invoking the three cosmic intuitions.
Well, sure, I mean, all these things come into play. I mean, you can just start running with it. You know, but the essential thing is just to recognize that it needs to be a dynamic phenomenon.
Mercy, in the connotation I think of most people, brings to mind someone begging for their life.
Is there any word in this book that can't be misunderstood? No. Understanding the cosmos is not accessible to the immature mind. You're going to get more and more and more distortion of meaning. That's all you're going to get out of the universe, you know, if you don't take delight in cultivating the insight to know true mercy from some, not even false mercy, but just from, you know, some limited lower level of meaning notion of mercy, you know. I mean, that's why way up in the beginning part of the book here, you know, when they sort of try to put the word mercy into a better context for you, it's like first just, next fair, then patient, then kind, and then and only then merciful. You know, so that it's nothing that you can put down there in the first, second levels of meaning, like begging for mercy, okay, first level of meaning, the level of the flesh. Up in the front here, you know, we already passed it, way up in the front here, to put mercy is... Okay, so there's an equal sign there. The definition of the word mercy. Mercy is applied love. Okay, it's not begging for your life. You know?
Applied love to ministry isn't going to always be gentle.
The ministration of applied love. It's like, I want some of that. Be careful what you ask for.
It can take the sting out of applied love. Ministry, if we recognize that, but when it's being applied with ministry, it's to prod you to look up.
Right, because you say you want to benefit from that which is above you. It's like, well, then you need to be moving because what you want to strike step with is not static. So their first task is to get you moving so that you're like the cosmos. The cosmos is fundamentally dynamic. It's a motion. You can't acquire any of the benefits of the cosmos as a static phenomenon. So the very first job of the angels is to poke you with a cattle prod and get you moving so that you at least have some measure of dynamism that's like the cosmos. And then they'll work on refining it. But you, yeah, they got to get it moving first.
That strikes stasis with eternity. No.
Right. The quote, unfortunate concept of mercy in that, you know, in 100,000 years when we're sitting around the table like this, we won't be so stuck in the mud to say, oh, but that's the concept I'm familiar with and happy with. And
yeah, can I just redefine the universe to match my initial preconception?
That's where
to watch out. Let's not dwell on this too much. You know, keep, but you know, just that initial recognition that the first thing you want to do with all these words that we have is it get them sorted into a hierarchy. You know, they have a foundation level that they need to rise up to, and then you can start to really do something with them in a true sense. I mean, and you have to do that. I mean, you start with mercy down in the level of the flesh. Move it up. It's like, well, how far do I move it up? Keep moving it up until it gets to the fifth level of meaning, where its true foundation point is. It's like love. Well, I start with that in the level of the flesh. Yeah, okay, so I need to move it up. How far? That one you got to move all the way up to the sixth level of meaning. That's its foundational cosmic level. You know, how about justice? How about just? Well, that's right there. You just need to make the first level of meaning now a true level, a cosmic level, you know, and not just I demand justice. So it's not just the immature level of selfishness, you know, that most people use the word justice as a selfish word. You know, I demand justice. It's like, well, no, I'm not being selfish. I demand justice for that person. That doesn't make it any better, okay? That's still the level of the flesh. You know, first just, you know, what do they mean by that? I need to be law-abiding and honest. First just. Okay? True justice. Etc. You know, so each of them needs to be up at the, you know, first put up at the level that they're supposed to be at. All right, let's see. Just notice the one of the things that kind of notice that they're playing with this parallel. You know, we have the Father, Son, Spirit here, and so they use the words universal and eternal, universally and eternally. You see that parenthetical there? Just notice how they play up, vamp on that several times here. Ever and always, universally and eternally, the Spirit is. See, it's because of its super additive consequence of from the Father and the Son. Okay?
It is not possible that the Spirit could have more of goodness than the Father, since all goodness takes origin in the Father. But in the acts of the Spirit, we can the better comprehend such goodness. The Father's faithfulness and the Son's constancy are made very real to the spirit beings and the material creatures of the spheres by the loving ministry and ceaseless service of the personalities of the infinite Spirit.
See how they vamped on it twice there? See, you've got, so the Father's faithfulness, you know, the universality of the word full, and we all know faith, okay, that's, you know, you have a faith grasp, because of that personality that you were bestowed by the Father, and the Son's constancy, like the word eternal, is very constant. And then loving ministry, love for the Father, and the ceaseless service, the ceaseless, like the eternal nature of the Son. Okay, see, they're giving you different ways to think about the super additive consequence, you know, picture of the Spirit. Okay.
The conjoint creator inherits all the Father's beauty of thought and character of truth. And these sublime traits of divinity are coordinated in the near supreme levels of the cosmic mind in subordination to the infinite and eternal wisdom of the unconditional and limitless mind of the third source and center.
Okay, so there's now they're using infinite eternal, that pair. Unconditioned and limitless mind of the third source and center. We have two proper designations that have the word mind in it for the third source and center. We have, and on the one hand, the third source and center is the absolute mind. And you can even say more specifically, as the conjoint actor is the absolute mind, the anchor point of mind gravity, the absolute mind. Unconditioned mind, the absolute mind. Limitless mind, that's the infinite mind. See, so another way to say that, you know, is the infinite eternal wisdom of the absolute and infinite mind of the third source and center. And so there's all these little things, see, all these different ways that they're helping you to begin to understand all these different designations that fill this section. Get you to play on them, think about them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Love equals truth, beauty, and goodness. Mm-hmm. That's throughout the book.
Yeah, and so, you know, and you know, of course, you hear you, beauty, truth, goodness, love. You know, so yeah, there's another one. You know, besides love, mercy, ministry, they're trying to get you to, you know, to really reflect on the truth, beauty, goodness, love, and you know, to get that fundamental pattern in play, tie it to the three persons. Now, the other thing, notice that they just said what we were talking about a little bit ago. You know, think about this. And these sublime traits of divinity are coordinated, okay, that's mother, coordinated in the near supreme levels of the cosmic mind. Okay, so what are they picturing? You know, go to the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart again. Okay, so here's on the fifth cosmic level is the infinite mother spirit. We're talking about that spirit mind presence. Okay, of the infinite mother spirit. Okay, they say sublime traits in the near supreme levels. Okay, well, the fourth cosmic level, that's literally the supreme level. So in other words, that's an interface. So here's the presence of the infinite mother spirit, here's the supreme level. If that is going to influence down here in the cosmic domain where we are, it comes in through that interface of the supreme, and the first thing it impacts is the near supreme levels. You know, it feeds, that's a top-down phenomenon. It's coming down, you know, into the cosmic levels. And, you know, we've alluded to this a little bit, you know, the most subtle aspect of the cosmic mind is the cosmic mind that you're going to be tapping into once you're a finaliter and come back out from paradise. You know, now you're not in a super universe mind womb anymore. You're functioning throughout all seven super universes. You're functioning in the collective super universe level of mind. Well, what is that? You know, who holds that or ministers that mind to me as a finaliter out there, no longer at the individual super universe level where it's the reflective mother spirits, but I'm now on the collective universe level, the near supreme levels. That's the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. You know? You have that, they provide a mind presence that you now are encircuited in. Okay, so, you know, that's technically what they're alluding to there. But the whole point is, you know, when they say, you know, to say near supreme, to think of I'm coming down. You know, that the mind that is cosmic mind comes down from above, down from the infinite mind, is, you know, the consequence in the finite is what we call the cosmic mind. You know, the consequence of that downreach of mind ministry.
In this class I was trying to teach Sunday about evolution, the biggest challenge was trying to get people to think that things have to have a source, that my things of the mind can't have material things as a source.
Yeah, and why is it so hard to get people to recognize that? Because that requires having developed a relationship with the first cosmic intuition, your logical acumen, your ability to recognize that it's a causal reality that you live in, where you know it's self-evident that everything has to have a source. You know, that's not something that you can deduce. That's something that you have to just recognize. You know, that's a logical recognition that nothing can exist without a source. You can't get something from nothing, and you can't get bananas from rutabagas. Okay, bananas have to come from a banana source, and rutabagas have to come from a rutabaga source. Okay, like you're just saying. Okay, mind has to come from mind. Spirit has to come from spirit. You know, so if spirit has to come from spirit, I should be able to follow that back causally. There has to be the absolute spirit. There has to be a source, okay, and a center. Of course, we know the source, you know, I mean, in the literal energy sense, is a deity absolute. But, you know, like you said, they're the third source and center. They're the second source and center. First source and center. They're sources. And the very fact that you would call them sources and center is an appeal to the consciousness that only exists as a personal self. Only a personal self has logical acumen, where it's self-evident that things have to have a source. Animal origin minds with intense belief systems are clueless of such a thought. There's nothing down there in the lower domain of mind that forces you into the belief in a source. Yeah.
Chris, here's one from the foreword on the third page. Divinity is creature comprehensible as truth, beauty, and goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Correlated in personality as love, mercy, and ministry. How am I supposed to look at that? You know.
We're just bringing those. You know, that's kind of what we're alluding to. We weren't going into all those details, but that's the details. You can think of the actuality. Remember, this is threefold actuality. So you build up a threefold actuality of beauty, truth, and goodness. You harmonize it together. You unify it into love. And then you take love to mercy and mercy to ministry. See, so, you know, you can think about it a lot of ways. I mean, you could think about it maybe building up to the love and then coming back down again as mercy and ministry, or whatever way you want to picture, you know, that you have this sort of reciprocal system.
And the other thing is that if compassion works better for your consciousness, you know, use that one.
Now, of course, what does compassion mean? With suffering. Passion means suffering. With suffering. In other words, you know, if you understand God or deity as compassionate, the notion is that God or deity is with you in your suffering. You know, and that's your idea of love. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, there's a truth there. Get back here first.
So the personality of the Father is love, the personality of the Son is ministry, the personality of...
The Son is mercy.
Right, the Son is mercy.
Yeah.
And the infinite Spirit is
ministry. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, you initiate it into an individual reality by bringing in personality. It's not just, you know, truth, beauty, and goodness as actualities flowing through you. The adjuster can't make soul out of that because you haven't given the permission for the adjuster to make soul about. You haven't grasped it as your own. He only copies what you grasp and realityize within yourself. You know, he copies what... You know, what parts of yourself you've personalized. He'll copy that. All this stuff that you haven't personalized, you know, doesn't matter how good this is, if you haven't personalized it, it's not copied. You know, remember, it has no survival value, like they say. You know, it's not copied. You know, it's just goodness flowing through.
You know, we're talking about infinite beings here, and boiling down their personality to one quality.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it, you know, you it is. You can say The personality of the Second Source and Center is mercy. That's not a statement of the totality of the fact of the Second Source and Center, but that is a true statement. You know, again, reflect on the difference between fact and truth. So, it is an on ramp to the Second Source and Center. If you're reflecting on that idea, you're on the path of truth that is the Second Source and Center. Oh, one more thing. Okay.
Katie was talking about as a conductor.
Mm-hmm.
That's a coordinating. Talking about beauty, it's the third source and center.
Well, of course, you know, a lot of the immediacy of beauty comes as the individuality. The aisle, the pattern of the aisle, you know, is the pattern of beauty. There's a lot of ways you can think about this. But nonetheless, yeah. Okay, so just, you can see more. I mean, you know, we just spent a lot of time talking about the relation of the Spirit to the Father and the Son, so they're going to give us some more of that.
3, relation of the Spirit to the Father and the Son. As the eternal Son is the word expression of the first absolute and infinite thought of the universal Father, so the conjoint actor is the perfect execution of the first completed and creative concept or plan for combined action by the Father-Son personality partnership of absolute thought-word union. The third source and center eternalizes concurrently with the central or fiat creation, and only this central creation is eternal in existence among universes. Since the personalization of the third source, the first source no more personally participates in universe creation. The universal Father delegates everything possible to his eternal Son. Likewise, does the eternal Son bestow all possible authority and power upon the conjoint Creator. The eternal Son and the conjoint Creator have, as partners and through their coordinate personalities, planned and fashioned every post-Havona universe which has been brought into existence. The Spirit sustains the same personal relation to the Son in all subsequent creation that the Son sustains to the Father in the first and central creation.
So just, you know, that we've mentioned that a little bit. Just, you know, when we talk about that universal Creator, co-creator, conjoint Creator, that triplet. You know, they're reminding you of this, that, you know, very early on, that whole role of the first source and center, being, you know, pairing with the co-creator, so that you have the universal Creator and the co-creator paired and doing some creating. That's just to get the thing initiated. That's to get the aisle and the third source and center and Havona in place, if you want to think about it in a, you know, time sequence sort of fashion. But then he's done. You know, and everything is delegated, you know, from that pair to the next pair as a creative pair. And that's what they're bringing out. And then, you know, and like you're saying, of course, the way we immediately understand that is just this simple downstepped expression of the second pair, an eternal Son to a creator Son and the infinite Spirit to a creative Spirit. And that's the creator pair now at the local universe level. Yeah.
What role is the Father playing then once he divests himself?
Well, I mean, he still is functioning as a universal creator, but not in the act of, you know, really universe creation per se.
Right.
Remember, we talked about this. Instead of the universal creator, co-creator, relationship to the second source and center, it's universal creator, coordinate creator. You know, the Father and the Son are really father mother to a creator Son. You know, so they're still creating creator sons, but that creative energy of the first source and center, and it's not really the first, it's of God the Father, you know, the bigger sense. You know, that creative energy of God, of the Father, is, you know, in terms of what we've been revealed, is going into creator sons, not into local universes directly. You know, it gets into the universal into the local universe through the Creator's Son. So it's indirect. That's what they're saying. You know, so after that initial thing, his personal role is indirect, not direct.
But in a very real way, what he does is then live in that universe through the thought adjusters.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, the infinite upholder comes into play a lot as fragments of that infinite upholder nature as thought adjusters.
And also the personality circuit.
In the personality circuit, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just, you know, yeah, if you bring out the ellipse, you know, we have this huge, you know, role that the universal creator is playing in initiating the whole universe of universes. But then after that, you know, that needs to be controlled. Universal controller needs to control what's been created. The universal father needs to encircuit beings in that. The infinite upholder, you know, it's the source of adjuster fragments. You know, yeah, so these other facets start to really come into play. You know, and you know, so from our perspective of things needing to be created and the Father being the initiator, you know, we really see that universal creator part of the initiator, you know, really back there at the beginning in eternity, initiating things. But he then, you know, and then he, you know, all that gets delegated then, though, after that, after he's initiated it.
The main ongoing thing that he cannot and never will give away is all of the personalities.
With the one qualification, there was a, you know, you start with that total will, start with that reservoir of all will, the infinite one, and the first thing he does is, you know, you might want to say he's like splits that in half or something. I mean, takes a huge measure of that whole reservoir of total will and separates it. You know, there's two reservoirs of will now. There's first source personality reservoir and third source personality reservoir. The infinite spirit is a reservoir of third source personality, which he doles out of his own free will. You know, so he, you know, instead of breaking all those things up himself, he took the whole lump sum and handed it off, and then the third person doles those out. You know, and then of course there's also the ones where he doesn't dole it out directly. He individuates some will, hands it to the third source and center, and then the third source and center actually bestows. Yeah. So,
there's the other question as to whether or not every personality was created in infinity and then just waiting for that time for that personality to be.
Yeah. The individuation happened, you know, it happens outside of time. So, from our temporal perspective, it happened before time began, you know, or after time ended. But that's kind of hard to think about. It's easier to think about it as happening before time began. Eternity, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know what he meant, yeah. But it is, you know, it is the infinite upholder. It's happening in infinity and eternity, you know, in a sense, you know. But from a temporal perspective, yeah, eternity. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so that yeah, just, you know, again, it reinforces the Father is just the initiator. Because the Father is just the initiator, that's why it's so important. And they talk about it all the time, this whole notion of delegating. You know, because he doesn't do the follow-up, he just initiates. Obviously, a big component of understanding the nature of the Father is understanding that delegation aspect. He just initiates, and then everything else has to be in someone else's hands. And so all that everything else is in someone else's hands. It's been delegated. And then you just need to figure out whose hands it's in. He, she, or it, or, you know, where did it go? All right.
A creator son of the eternal son and a creative spirit of the infinite spirit created you and your universe. And while the Father in faithfulness upholds that which they have organized, it devolves upon this universe son and this universe spirit to foster and sustain their work as well as to minister to the creatures of their own making.
So just one little thing there. So you mentioned the infinite upholder. Notice they used upholds. Okay, the Father in faithfulness upholds. Okay, faith, remember, faith fundamentally, it's a grasp. But what kind of a grasp? Is it a horizontal grasp?
Grasp?
It's an upward grasp. So when you say in faithfulness upholds, in other words, you reach all the way up to the highest level. Yeah, he's the infinite upholder at the highest level. But down where we are, what does it say? Who sustains, who upholds down here? The Creative Mother Spirit is the upholder in the local universe. The Creator Son fosters, and the Creative Mother Spirit sustains, upholds. Right? You know, the actual in place within space and time upholder is not he up at infinity. Okay. So, yeah, they very carefully, see, will word those things so that when you're ready to pick up the differentials, it doesn't just say the Father upholds that which they have organized. Throw in infaithfulness, you can say, of course it's unfaithfulness. But see why? They're trying to get you to properly put him up. He's upholding at the infinite level, not the sub-infinite levels. All right.
The infinite spirit is the effective agent of the all-loving Father and the all-merciful Son for the execution of their conjoint project of drawing to themselves all truth-loving souls on all the worlds of time and space. The very instant the Eternal Son accepted his Father's plan of perfection attainment for the creatures of the universes, the moment the Ascension Project became a Father-Son plan, that instant the Infinite Spirit became the conjoint administrator of the Father and the Son for the execution of their united and eternal purpose. And in so doing, the Infinite Spirit pledged all his resources of divine presence and of spirit personalities to the Father and the Son. He has dedicated all to the stupendous plan of exalting surviving will creatures to the divine heights of paradise perfection.
Did you notice what he put out there? In so doing, the Infinite Spirit pledged all his resources of divine presence. What does the Third Source and Center put into play? A point he-like fact? No, a presence. Okay. The Infinite Mother Spirit, of course, immediately, and then, of course, all of the downstepped expressions like Creative Mother Spirits, Reflective Mother Spirits. Okay, the presence, that not the point he, the presence. He pledged presence and spirit personalities, who are called angels, who are he's or she's? She's. The Third Source and Center put she-ness, their whole response, dedicated all, this allness that was dedicated was not he-like, it's all she-like. It's angels and presence. Okay?
And he or she is doing this in faith.
Yeah. And somewhere here coming immediately up is they stress that, remind you, and this is, don't think of this as a machine. Don't think of this as automatic. Think of this as, an exercise of free will. They try to stress that, because of course it is. Not like they're saying, there's this infinite personality that has this perfect, complete recognition of what's needed, and boom, instantaneously, all that's going to be needed for all time is in place, is present and accounted for. Angels are accounted for. Okay? He's present and accounted for and complete, for all eternity.
In order to be drawn,
yep,
you have to be truth loving.
Yes.
So you turn yourself into the iron filing.
You supply the favorable conditions.
Right. All of these magnets on down to us are incredible beings who are just going.
Yeah. Right. If
and the, yeah, there's just
a, you are something that they can grab a hold of,
can
you they do not draw all self-centered individuals to themselves.
Right.
There's not, because there's nothing there. And again, it's not because they, because they hate, self-centered individuals. it's just a literal thing. It's a gravity thing. If there's nothing there, gravity doesn't grab a hold of anything. You have to be something that can be latched onto. You have to be real.
notice the word you used? Or truth. You said truth loving.
Yeah, like they say, you're truth loving soul. See what they say.
That connects. See truth as opposed to just not.
In order to have truth, you need both fact and goodness. Yeah. You have to be a genuine fact identified with goodness so that there's truth flowing between those, right.
And that, coincidentally, that's what Michael gives all of us. Truth.
Truth flowing through those anchors,
favorable conditions.
Take delight in cultivating.
Favorable conditions are no doubt, a cooperation.
A consecration. You can talk about favorable conditions in a lot of ways in specific contexts, but, to speak of it generally, it's just one simple fact. You have to take delight in cultivating a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. And it's like, can you boil it down even more? Yes, you must reflect. Well, what do I have to do to reflect? Well, you can't reflect in the lower domain of the hourglass. Only a personal self can reflect. So you have to realityize some aspect of your animal origin self. There has to be some part of you that lives in the domain, the temple within, with the three floors, the volume, the capacity of the three cosmic intuitions created by the Creative Mother Spirit, established by the Creative Mother Spirit within you. You have to be up there because only that fact can reflect. Only a personal self can reflect. And only a personal self can be grown. Only a personal self is favorable conditions. Not an animal origin self is not favorable conditions. Only a to reflect is not to introspect. It's not to navel gaze. And it's more than to meditate. Meditate is the first step of figuring out that there's this space up here. To put yourself in a meditative state is to try to be present up here. You're not doing anything. You're just trying to figure out how to be there. Can I be there, or are all my incessant clamorings going to, capture my attention again and take me off on a wild goose chase? Can I just be present in the temple? Once you figure out how to be there, one must do something as well as be something. Okay, now that you've figured out, now that you've initiated the process by consecrating your will to the will of the Father so that you are in the temple, you're using your personality gift from the Father so that there is a personal self that is up here. That personal self now needs to do something. What is that, what is that something that a personal self does? A personal self reflects. A personal self views the cosmos and it views the self, the animal origin self, sees what the animal origin self needs, notices the cosmos has what that self needs, and creates a flow from the cosmos down into the self. It consecrates its mind to the cosmos, to the universal harmony. It makes itself like, that personal self makes itself like the cosmos, consecrates its nature, and it's an automatic phenomenon. If you supply the favorable conditions, the dynamic fact that is God will flow through you. And it will flow down into yourself. And it will begin to transform that self. It'll grow it up into the temple.
Personal self is the key then, because otherwise there's no flow.
And if you're spiritual but not religious, it doesn't happen. This is spiritual but not religious. This is religious. This is personal spiritual experience. This is just spiritual experience down in the lower domain. Okay? Being merely spiritual does not get it done. You have to have grasped that unity. Only when you grasp it And you just let it flow through yourself. Does it exist up here so that it can be a conduit for the cosmos into you? No, I mean, that it's so important, you know, to reform your notion of religion so that it's devoid of any negativity that would make you shy away from it. Because to turn away from religion is to turn away from God, is to turn away from any potential of soul growth. You know, if you turn away from religion, you're going to wake up on the first mansion world with your soul of grace, with your embryonic soul. You will have built nothing. You will have not added to that. Nothing will have been added by God to that, of course, is technically how it works. You know, you can't grow soul by being spiritual but not religious. You have to be religious. It has to be in the temple. It has to be a personal self that does it. And it's like, well, what in the heck is that difference? Yeah, maybe you should spend some time reflecting on the difference, because it's all important.
So you need to redefine what religious means to everybody. Otherwise, you're just going to offend them.
Well, it starts with you. Seriously, you've got to make that new in your consciousness, your understanding.
So we need to spend time reflecting on the cosmos.
And of course, what's the cosmos? The universal harmony.
Universal harmony.
You know, not on the stars.
Right.
You know?
Universal harmony.
Universal harmony.
How do we do this? What does that look like?
I got it.
Do that.
Go ahead.
If I can personally identify with those things that have eternal value, then...
Right, when they start talking about the difference between a tadpole and a frog, over and over and over again, they make his point. You need to establish a loyalty within to not just value. That's spiritual but not religious. You need to establish a loyalty to supreme values. Supreme values. Which doesn't just mean really high values. Okay? What's the difference between finite and supreme? One's an actuality and the other's a reality.
Yeah. They travel.
Sure.
The same.
Right.
Which is the actuality and which is the reality?
You know, there's a finite actuality, all culminated in a supreme reality.
Yeah.
You know, there's association and then there's integration, you know, at all these levels. You have finite, supreme, absolute, ultimate, co-absolute, absolute. The first is the actuality, the second is the reality. You know, you have ultimate levels of personality, action, for instance. But you have absonite levels of actuality. Okay? So, loyalty to supreme values. Only a person can grasp supreme values. A mind that has relationship, to unity likeness, like the sixth adjutant, could notice that unity likeness, that value likeness, and have a loyalty to it. But you got to go beyond that. You know, it's not just about a loyalty to idealism, say, or even a loyalty to loyalty, or any sort of just basic spirit thing. It has to be realityized. So it's like, well, I don't understand. Well, you don't have to understand the distinction in order to do it. All you have to know is you can never reach high enough. Always be trying to reach higher. That's how you achieve loyalty to supreme values. Never be satisfied with your current faith grasp. It needs to be living faith, not static faith. Living faith is always trying to reach higher than it reached the last time. That's a loyalty to supreme values. You're trying to supremacize your relationship with value. That's the key.
And that's how the supreme grows.
Yeah, that's how the supreme grows. That's how you are grown. Is that dynamic living faith that's ever grasping higher than it grasped before. Never satisfied. Never satiated. And if you do that, not only are you demonstrating a loyalty to supreme values, but guess what? If you grasp here, establish an anchor there, and then the next time you grasp higher, not only do you grasp higher, but what you do is you turn that what was an upreach into a part of your foundation. You convert that initial faith into trust. Faith grows into trust. It goes from spiritual faith to soul trust. It becomes soul substance. You actually have a soul that's bigger now than it was by grace. You know, and then upon that foundation of trust, you now can reach higher. See, that's the thing. You can't just imagine. You have to literally be standing on the first floor in order to grasp the second floor. You have to literally be on the second floor in order to grasp the third floor. Faith has to be converted to trust into floors that you stand on. You can't stand on spirit. You can stand on soul.
To expect in ourselves first, we would think, oh, I don't want to offend them. No, that's not dynamic. How am I going to cheer them on? And then start that as your meditation before you get into the religious style.
Yeah, sure. That's an obvious corollary to having, you know, this kind of living faith, this life that follows truth, is that you're always taking a positive stance in relationship to reality. You're not anti anything. You know, I've tried to make that point a number of times. Okay, let's get a little bit more of this.
The Infinite Spirit is a complete, exclusive, and universal revelation of the Universal Father and His Eternal Son. All knowledge of the Father-Son partnership must be had through the Infinite Spirit, the conjoint representative of the divine thought-word union. The Eternal Son is the only avenue of approach to the Universal Father, and the Infinite Spirit is the only means of attaining the Eternal Son. Only by the patient ministry of the Spirit are the ascendant beings of time able to discover the Son. At the center of all things, the Infinite Spirit is the first of the paradise deities to be attained by the ascending pilgrims. The third person enshrouds the second and the first persons, and therefore must always be first recognized by all who are candidates for presentation to the Son and His Father. And in many other ways does the Spirit equally represent and similarly serve the Father and the Son.
Okay, so we've brought that out a number of times. That whole bit about, you know, being make sure you literally recognize that you have the Father at the exact center on the upper surface of the aisle, and that the Son completely surrounds, like a hemisphere, enshrouds the Father in the core, and then the Infinite Spirit again. You know, so those three personal presences as the three He's, as the three existential transcendent facts, have this hierarchical relationship. You know, you can only get to the Father through the Son, and only get to the Son through the Spirit. Period. There's no other avenue. Right. And the three concentric circles, of course, you know, directly depict that. You know, you can't get to this, you know, to one circle on the inside unless you go through the one, you know, that's outside of it. Exactly. So, what is existential fact at the center of the aisle gets expressed into Havona, So you're working your way, you know, in the circuits of Avona, and you've got the seventh and the sixth, and then on the fifth circuit is where you're working on the recognition of the infinite spirit. Okay, and so let's picture yourself recognizing the infinite, having recognized the infinite spirit. What have you recognized? You've recognized, like we show so many times. You start with, this initial fact that gets expressed as individuality and unity. You know, from the Father comes the Isle and the Son, and then there's this. The relationship between the two comes together in the third person, the third source and center. So when you achieve a recognition of the third source and center, the infinite spirit, you've achieved a recognition of power and personality together, of creating and controlling together. So how am I going to proceed? Well, to take the next step, so through that recognition, I can get to the Son, it says, and then to the Father. Well, in order to, this is a personal journey I'm making here. I'm trying to get to a personal recognition of the Father, eventually literally on paradise. I got to go through the Son, not through both the aisle and the Son. I have to go through the Son. So wow! Here I've got the aisle and the Son all together. So my next step is I've got to tease the two apart. I've got to get to the point where I can separate the aisle from the Son and the Son from the aisle. I have to separate the individuality and the unity in order to recognize the Son. So on that fourth circuit, got a very interesting task ahead of me. I have to be able to distinguish, what they tell you that in terms of, like, if you just talk about the substance, the paradise spirit substance of the body of the Son and the substance of the aisle, that there are difference in name only, even to high beings. Okay. So obviously they're not talking about I have to somehow be able to feel the two substances and feel the difference, because they say that's not possible. But I can get to the point where I have such an objective awareness of things that I can distinguish absolute individuality from absolute unity. And once I do that, once I kind of get the aisleness out of the third source and center, so I can just see, the unity aspect. I've got them all together in the third source and center. I got to pull the individuality aspect. I got to tease that out, the aisle-likeness. What I'll have left is Son-likeness. I'll have the second source and center. I'll have discovered the second source and center, distinct from the aisle. And then through that unity fact, I can get to the Father. It's a personal journey of experience. On the third circuit of Avona. And remember, and again, like we said, you're recognizing these presences of the three in Avona, but it's such that it fully potentializes you, so that you can, when you get to the actually onto the aisle, through all that stuff you've got to do in the second and first circuits yet, after you've done that, that you can actually make this final personal existential journey of discovery on the aisle of the infinite spirit, the eternal Son, and the universal Father.
Billions and billions of years from now, you can still say to yourself and still say to the Father, it is my will that your will be done.
Right, and then it's absolutely has to be there the whole distance. But remember what they tell you, and they start to give you a little bit more of the details. When do you achieve perfection of consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father?
Before you can enter Havona.
Before you can enter Havona, you have perfection of purpose.
Right.
Is the keys to Havona. So it's obviously there all the way through Havona. And yeah. Don't misunderstand me. You know, that consecration, you know, it is my will that your will be done. But just, you know, recognizing that you're working and working and working on perfecting that consecration of your will to his will, and you achieve that on Uversa. It's like, okay, so now I am fully initiated. Now what? Okay, well, now you can actually begin your spirit ascension. Now that you've perfected purpose, we can actually do something with you of real significance. Okay? Now you are going to really do that consecration of mind that only a perfectly consecrated will can do. And that process of consecrating your mind, predicated on that perfection of consecration of will, is what powers you through all the circuits of Havana and gets you to paradise. You know, actually having a mind that can recognize the infinite spirit, and then a mind that can recognize the eternal son, and then a mind that can recognize, you know, the universal father, etc. And none, it's not even possible to consecrate your mind to such a degree that it can recognize the third source and center until you've perfected the consecration of your will.
And the will of God is to share your inner life.
Yeah, an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. You know, if I'm going to have my mind so reformed that I can recognize the third source and center, I have to really, really exhibit a willingness to share every square inch of that space to the full-blown reformation of God within. I mean, think about how much reworking it's going to take to get everything perfectly arranged so that it has the perfection of vision, of insight, to see, to recognize the three persons. How much are you going to have to be remolded? I mean, how much vision is going to have to be expanded? Okay. Remember what they tell you. I mean, you know, everyone always remembers that if you were to be taken to paradise right now, you'd have not one iota of experience. You know, you'd be devoid of any experience. Because there's not one shred of eyes to see or feel or anything there. It's not just paradise. If they took you to the pilot word of Avona right now, it would be like you're in the infinite void. You would not experience one thing. It's like, well, wait a minute. He says there's material things there and stuff. Yeah, but material of such an order that you have no way to feel it or anything. You would be devoid of all experience, even on the first world of Avona.
And you want to go home.
How much do I need to consecrate my mind, see, to reformation? I mean, we have such a long journey ahead of us.
A divine purpose for rebellion happening on those initial, the potential for rebellion on those initial, that initial leg of that journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, it's a supreme way of quickly developing purpose.
The point is not that you have to experience rebellion, but it is the case that you have to have a consecration that's such that you're immune to rebellion.
Right.
So yes, I mean, you can think of it in the positive. Well, you know, it's really easy to figure out what kind of a measure of consecration it takes to be immune to rebellion, if I actually have to be immune to rebellion, you know, I have no choice. Either I am immune or I'm not going to make it to the aisle. I'm going to be sucked into the black hole of the rebellion and I will be as if I had never been. I perforce must be immune in this local system or I'm not going to make it. Because the orgy of darkness and death is part of the domain I live in. You know, I must choose to not be of it. You know, if I'm in a system that doesn't have that, You know, that's not, it's not an immediate thing in play. But I still have to achieve a level of consecration that if there were a rebellion, I would be immune to it. But here you have no choice. Yeah, you must be, you know. And that's why Gabriel said, you know, Gabriel, why aren't you standing forth and putting up counter arguments to Lucifer? And he says, well, we're not interested in those who are not sophistry proof because they're not real. I.e., I can't draw something that's not real to the aisle. You have to be real. If you're real, you're sophistry proof. There's nothing I can do for you. You have absolute free will. If you want to make yourself invisible to spirit gravity, I can't alter that free will choice.
You're gravity proof.
Yes, you will be gravity proof. You'll be gravity transparent. You will be unreal.
Light attracts light.
Mm-hmm. And dark merges with the darkness.
Yeah, well, if you're
really
striving for God, you shall surely.
Yeah. All right. You know, if you seek truth, you will find truth. If you seek error, you will find error. That's the other side of the sword. You know? The fact that error and truth, you know, are here together. I mean, to remember that you can obey truth, which means you can also obey error.
Which one are you
going to see? It's like, well, how do I tell them apart? Yeah, that's a good question to ask. How do you tell those two apart? How do I know I know I'm following something and I'm really excited. Yeah, but what if you're following error? You need to have insight.
Personality. You need to exercise.
You need to have the second cosmic intuition, the moral discrimination. You have to be able to discriminate between those two. You have to be able to tell them apart.
You have that.
Yeah, I agree.
Intention.
Right.
It is my will to do your will. You could be traveling off in a weird direction. You know, there, even for Lucifer, there's a way back.
Well, not for Lucifer because he's iniquitous now. But what your point is? Your point is valid. I mean. You know, if you are attempting to grasp goodness, yeah. I mean, if you're attempting to grasp goodness, okay, the worst that you can do is evil.
Yeah.
You're not attempting to grasp ungoodness,
right.
Sin. Okay, so, but, it makes your journey a lot easier if not only are you attempting to grasp goodness, but you actually can distinguish, and so you do grasp it, and not go, and not down the road. It's like, oh, dang it. I mean, I thought I was grasping goodness, and it turned out to be badness, and I just, got myself all balled up. And now you, until you've fully, solidified that recognition, the possibility of having the best of intentions, but failing is in play.
Yeah. Adam and Eve.
All right. So, well, that took a lot more to work through those two sections. But then the next one here, you'll see, it continues on. You even see two of them. There's the presence of God. So this theme continues to play out, basically in this paper. To really appreciate this presence issue, and that. When I was describing what you're doing in Avona, see, you are discovering those presence, the presence of the Infinite Spirit there, which fills Avona, not the point personality fact that's on the aisle. So you're working your way up in this recognition of this presence phenomenon before it's the distinct personality phenomenon. And so that's why you have, if you carefully examine what you have here, you have it worded the way it does. There's not a lot really in here about the third source and center as an existential fact. That's something that you can just notice as you start to study this. It's not what you'd expect. It's like, you're thinking, well, I know they're starting me with all this existential stuff in there because they're trying to meet me where I am, and I don't understand experiential deity yet. But if you look here, most of the real meat of what's here is not about the existential fact of the third source and center as the conjoint actor. it just really is not here. You know, that's why I stress, you know, he gives his all, and his all is divine presence and daughters. That's his all. And it's like, well, that's not really a his all. That's a her all. Yeah, that's the whole point. The only, real tip of the hat to the existential on-ramp here is just by using he. But if you start to notice, it's like, well, wait a minute, but all the things they're describing are not point things. They're presence things.
It's interesting in how we can relate to deity. It's much closer to the third source and center than it is the first or the second.
And let me just make that last point before we wrap it up. I mean, that's the one of the ironies is all the efforts over human history to try to find God. They've got the cart before the horse in a lot of cases. They're trying to find the existential God. Well, you can't just find the existential God. You know, we now have been revealed this. How much it actually takes to actually find the existential God, you've got to work all the way through the whole hierarchy. You know, a billion worlds and everything, you know, before you find that. But wait a minute, but I have that thought. Yeah, the existential God reached all the way out to the bottom of the barrel here where we are started and sparked that thought in your mind. I want to find the existential God. But we've never had a real notion of what that took. It's like, yeah, hold on to that. But just, recognize that's way, way off in the future. In order to find the existential God, you've got to go through the experiential God to get to the existential God. And that's a long journey of growth, of transforming yourself into an experiential fact that can eventually experience an existential fact. All right, let's take a moment to reflect on that a little bit here.